Brian Lowe's farewell, we're going to give him the first question.
I'm honored.
It's going to take up the whole press conference.
I really want to put Cecily to work. I really want to ask you, like, about, you know, a lot of, you know, the right guards in your career. But I'll give her a friend. You know, you're going up against a Browns team, and they have a first-year head coach, and it's the Browns. Do you ever think back, or what do you think about when you think back to your very first season as a head coach? And do you have an appreciation for what a first-time coach is going through, you know, when you go up against a guy like Chudzinski this week?
Well, sure. You know, I definitely remember what, you know, some of my experiences were, you know, that year. But, you know, as it relates to, you know, the Browns right now, I mean, we really can't be too concerned about that. We just got to, like, we got a job to do here. We got to, you know, they're a good football team, and they got a lot of good players, and they work hard, and they've improved a lot. So, you know, I don't want to get caught up in all that. I mean, obviously, I've talked about this before, but, you know, I remember the first game. I remember Jimmy Johnson telling me, years later, that they didn't even have a scouting report for us in the first game because they were worried about Washington the next week. Didn't feel like they could dedicate too much time to us, which was about right. So, you know, you remember a few of those things. But I would say, you know, just looking at the Browns organization, I mean, overall, just kind of separately, you know, it's obvious they have a plan. And, you know, Jimmy Haslam, the owner, and Joe Banner, you know, and then they've implemented, you know, Mike and Chud, you know, to go through with it. But they definitely have a plan on what they want to do. And they have a lot of young players. They're young on defense. They've got a lot of young offensive linemen who aren't playing that, you know, I'm sure they must, you know, like. They've got a lot of good skill players and, you know, a lot of good players on defense, you know, period. They put a lot of young players into the kicking game. So they obviously have a plan, the way they handled the draft last year. And so forth. So, you know, it's a team that's young, they're talented, they're getting better, and it looks like they definitely have a vision, you know, that Jimmy and Joe, you know, have a definite vision for where they want the team to go, and they've, you know, had Mike and you know, Rod implement it. You know, they've got a very experienced coaching staff. You know, their strength and conditioning staff, I mean, has obviously done a good job because they have very few injuries other than at the quarterback position. They've remained remarkably healthy throughout the course of the year and they're a tough physical team. So, you know, it's not like they don't bang it around in there, but, you know, obviously their strength staff has, you know, has done a great job there. So, you know, those are some of the things that I, you know, I see with the Browns. But, I mean, really all that's sort of not very much in focus because, you know, we're concentrating on what they do, what their tendencies are, you know, what the matchups are going to be, you know, how we're going to game plan them and so forth. So, you know, that's really the target for us right now.
Bill, you guys have seen a bunch of tight ends who have basketball background. I know you didn't play Julius Thomas this year, but you saw him on tape, and then Gates over the years, and Cameron this week has. Is there something that those guys have in common that you see when you're defending them? Jimmy Graham, obviously, another one.
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, that I've seen with basketball players through the years is their hands. You know, that those guys have to have good hands. They obviously handle the ball a lot, and they handle it, you know, it's on them quickly. You know, they're cutting, and, you know, it's a short pass, and a lot of times it comes with good speed or bounce passes or trying to get it around the defender, that kind of thing. They have to be able to react to the ball very quickly. It's a lot different in football, you know, seeing the ball travel, you know, however many yards to you. And even if you're coming out of a cut, it's still not like in basketball where the passes a lot of times are very short, very tight. You know, you've got to reach out and extend and get the ball away from the defender like, you know, you do in football situations, rebounding the ball. I mean, it's not about – you can't let it come into your body. You've got to go up and aggressively take it. And so I would just say in general that basketball players and certainly basketball players that have come into football that I've coached or that I've observed, I would say one probably pretty common thing is their hands and their ability to handle the ball, you know, aggressively, cleanly, and it gets on quickly, but it doesn't seem to affect them like it does, you know, other players sometimes where the ball's on them and they can't quite find it, adjust to it. Those guys seem like they're used to it. They've done it their whole lives, and they're good at it.
Have you guys spent any time scouting basketball? Because I know Ron Wolf used to send guys to the Portsmouth camp, and the Eagles have a scout.
Yeah, sure. We've seen those guys through the years. There's that have back football football backgrounds that end up playing basketball. And you know, honestly, I've had many conversations with Coach Knight about that when he was at Indiana. And I would say that the big thing for most basketball players is, in general, is that they're quicker than they are fast. And when you get out there and time a lot of those guys in the 40-yard dash, they're slow. I mean, they might look fast on a basketball court, but, you know, we have such a much bigger field that vertical speed, especially for those positions, there's not many linemen playing basketball. So you're talking about skill guys, receivers, DBs, you know, those type of positions that most of them don't have the speed that we, at our level, they don't have the speed to play. They have quickness, and a lot of times they have exceptional quickness, but when it just comes out at the straight, flat-out speed, I'd say that's where a lot of times in the scouting part of it, the deficiencies come up. And so you go see a basketball player and say, this guy's got great hands, this guy's got great quickness, you know, this guy's strong, he's competitive. And then you go out and time him, and he runs 4.75, 4.8. Now, like, what are you going to do with him? I mean, what corner in this league is, you know, can, you know, they got to be able to run faster than that. Or if they're receivers, they got to be able to run faster than that. And, you know, I've seen that several times, you know, and like I said, I had a couple of those situations with, you know, Coach Knight Indiana, like, hey, I want you to take a look at this kid, this guy, you know, he's this, he's that, and he was, but then you go out and put a watch on him, and he's just not fast enough to play at this level. So it's generalities, but that's my general experience with it.
Bill, do you think there's been any change in philosophy from a kickoff return standpoint since they moved it up from the 30 to the 35? It seems like before that, a kick maybe 4 or 5 yards into the end zone would always mostly result in the returner taking a knee, and now it kind of seems the opposite.
Yeah, oh, no question. I think there's a much different mentality. You know, again, it comes back to, you know, a philosophy. If you have a, you know, if you have a kickoff returner or – you know, a guy that you feel like is capable of making a play, then, you know, you're risking, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards of field position, whatever it is, you know, even if it doesn't go good, let's say he gets out to the 16, 17, whatever it is, versus him having a chance to, you know, make a play. And, you know, you're just taking the ball out of that guy's hands. Is there a little bit of field position risk? Yeah, there's, arguably a little bit, but if you feel that, you know, your return matches up well enough against their coverage or your guy is, you know, a guy that you just want to get the ball in his hands and you're willing to take that 4 or 5 yard, five, whatever it is, field position loss in exchange for the opportunity to make a play, then absolutely, that's the trade-off. So, yeah, you're seeing guys coming out from, you know, 7, 8, 9, 9.5 yards deep now that you probably wouldn't have seen, you know, a while back. And so, that, you know, that whole rule has had a lot of different, you know, dynamics to it that, and also relative to the college rule, which is, you know, the 35-yard kickoff, but then the 25-yard field position. But then you see a lot of college teams, you know, now going with the, of course, they have the wider hash marks, but they're going with the cross field kicks, more hang time, kind of forcing the return team to bring the ball out and, you know, trying to nail them down there inside the 25 rather than just banging it away. And so, you know, it's, you know, there's definitely some, Not that I really care about the college game, but, you know, but it's interesting because they're evaluating the kickers and the returners to a degree there. So, you know, you're looking at the strategy and how all that shapes up, you know, relative to, you know, to our game where, I'd say for the most part, the kickers are just banging away. Now, again, you know, when you tell a kicker to just bang away, then sometimes those kicks that are coming down, you know, 7, 8 yards deep in the end zone, you know, have 3-8 hang time too. Now, so that, you know, it's not the same. There's a difference between, you know, 2 yards deep and 4 or 5 hang time and 9 yards deep and 3-8 hang time. You know what I mean? I'd rather be 9 yards deep. So, you know, I think there's a trade-off there, and I think the returners are definitely aware of that, the guys that are going for distance, trying to touch back it. Yeah, the balls are deeper, but they're also, many of them are with less hang time and sometimes significantly less hang time. So, you know, that changed it too. So it's not all about how deep the ball is. There's certainly a, you know, a hang time element involved as well.
Talking to Matthew yesterday and having him be the guy that sort of says yes or no to the return man, is that kind of a nod to just his special teams knowledge?
Yeah, sure, and judgment and experience. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the guys that we've, you know, had back there, you know, and Vereen did that, and, you know, Kevin Falk was, you know, a guy that did that for, you know, guys like that. Sure, that's a big part of it, especially, you know, in conditions that are, it's one thing in a dome, you know, where you're getting the same conditions every, you know, every week, but, you know, here between, you know, the wind and the, again, the, you know, the hang on the kickoff and the coverage team and, you know, knowing who you're playing against, what your return is, what, you know, again, if you're trying to run a, you're trying to run a sideline return and the ball's deep in the end zone and it's away from the return, I mean, you've got a long way to go to get to where you want to, you know, it's, that's different than, you know, a ball that's kicked deep on a middle return down the middle where you're a lot closer to where you want to be. So it's, again, there's a lot of things that go into making that judgment more than just, you know, well, the ball's this far deep in the end zone. It's, you know, what's the rest of the play and how long is the ball here?
How much of Dick Ebo's influence do you see in Ray Horton's defense, and how much is he putting his own stamp on it?
Well, I mean, every team's different. So, you know, you could take the same coaches on one team, put them on another team, and it's still different because you have different players, and, you know, it's different. Even though the X's and O's might be the same, it'll be different. So, yeah, there's definitely some similarities, but I mean, there's a lot of differences. It's kind of like, you know, watching the Arizona defense relative to the Pittsburgh defense last year when he was at Arizona. You know, now it's watching the Cleveland defense relative to the Pittsburgh defense, but, you know, he's at Cleveland. I mean, obviously, one of the big differences is just, you know, the linebackers. I mean, these guys, you know, Jackson, Robertson, Carter, you know, whoever it is. I mean, all those guys are very athletic. They're very good in pass coverage. They get their hands on a lot of balls, and they do a lot less blitzing than, let's just say, the Pittsburgh linebackers, the inside guys do. So, you know, you see DeQuell Jackson back there sometimes 20 yards deep, you know, in coverage, tipping a ball or being in a passing lane, forcing a quarterback to throw it down, you know, Robertson. I mean, those guys, some of the secondary interceptions that Gibson and Ward have gotten have come from tip balls by the linebackers. So, you know, they're interceptions by the corners or the DBs, but they're really, you know, I'd say the majority of the plays were made by the linebackers. So it's, you know, I'd say that part of it is a little bit different than what you, relative to Pittsburgh, where, you know, Pittsburgh, you got a lot more, you know, linebackers blitzing, two off a side, guys crossing up the middle, you know, things like that. I mean, not that these guys don't blitz, I'm not saying that, but it's a little bit different, and their skills are different than the Pittsburgh guys, which makes sense. I mean, if you had, depending on the type of player you have, you do more or less with a guy based on his skills. But these linebackers are very good coverage linebackers, probably as good a inside coverage linebackers as we've seen all year, you know, as a group, you know, whether it's Carter or Robertson or obviously DeQuell Jackson.
When you prepare for a coach or a coordinator who's moved around and maybe you've seen them before, do you spend a lot of time in the backlog looking at, you know, patterns or tendencies, or do you mostly look at new personnel?
Yeah, I think any time a coordinator changes, you know, you go back to your notes for that coordinator at that, the team that he was at and what he did there. Sure, no question. I mean, that travels with the guy. Now, you know, again, sometimes that stays the same, sometimes it gets modified a little bit, sometimes it changes, you know, depending on who the head coach is or, you know, what the, you know, you just have to look at it. Sometimes it matches up pretty cleanly, sometimes part of it matches up, like maybe it's the third down package, but their base defense is different or vice versa, or, you know, you see certain elements of it, maybe the pressures are the same, but the zone coverages are a little bit different, you know, whatever it happens to be. But yeah, absolutely, that's always same thing in the kicking game, offense, defense. Yeah, I think you definitely, you know, you want to track those guys, and that's part of what you do in the off season. You know, you look at your opponents on the schedule. You look at coordinators who have changed, or maybe a particular person that's been added to the staff. Maybe it's not even a coordinator, but like a new offensive line coach or something like that, that might, you know, that guy might have his protection system, or he might have his running game, you know, certain schemes or, you know, that type of thing. And you see that scheme element has been added to the team. Then as you go through the year and you look at it and you say, okay, well, how much of an influence is this? And, you know, we know they have that, but they're not using it. Or, yeah, they're using it a lot. It looks like this guy is running his protections, and maybe the coordinator's running his pass patterns or, you know, whatever it is.
Well, how much does it help when you, you know, coming into this week and uncertainty at their quarterback position, but you're pretty familiar with Norv. How much does that help and factor into your game prep?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, like I said, Norv's, you know, run his offense pretty much since he was in Dallas. That doesn't make it easy to stop. I mean, it's just, you know, they do a good job. I mean, honestly, I'd rather not see Norv, you know. Not, you know, just because he's been an experienced guy in the league, or, you know, I don't know if that's a good thing. It's probably a bad thing, you know, because he definitely knows what he's doing. He has his, you know, he's dealt with everything. So whatever, you know, opportunities he sees, whatever weaknesses you have, then he's going to recognize them, and then he's got his plays to go in there and expose them. And he's certainly got the personnel to do it with. So, we know what his, you know, what his basic stuff is. So does everybody else. But, you know, that doesn't keep him from doing it, and it doesn't make it easy to stop at all. So, no, I'm not looking forward to seeing Norv anymore. I was looking forward to seeing Dick LeBeau, you know, with the Steelers 3 weeks ago.
Well, maybe a different way to ask it is, how much has Norv changed what he does from quarterback to quarterback since he's had so many changes this year at that position?
Yeah, I would say not a lot. I mean, I'm sure that he, you know, subtly does some things, and maybe there's some calls he would make with one guy more than another guy, or that kind of thing. But no, they don't change their offense. They basically run their offense, and, you know, it's more utilization of their skilled personnel. I mean, I think all the guys, you know, I've watched all four of them, and it looks to me like they all can run the offense. Now, some of them haven't been there very long, but, you know, either they have background in it, or just watching them play, you can see them. They can throw the comebacks. They can throw the end cuts. You know, they can handle the offense and do what, you know, Norv wants them to do. So, you know, it's not like they're running a, you know, a big zone option scheme or something like that. You know, the quarterbacks they have been guys that look like they're comfortable in the pocket, throwing the ball down the field, reading coverages, getting the ball to the right guy. So whoever's in there, I'm sure, is going to run his offense. I don't think they're going to come out and run the wishbone.
Bill, do you give strong consideration to cover two for a guy like Josh Gordon and the deep downfield threat that he is?
Well, I mean, look, I think every coverage has a place. That's why they're all in there. So depends on what you're trying to defend.
If you do the cover two, though, doesn't that take away from run defense, though? Because it takes a guy out.
Not necessarily. I mean, it depends on what you're trying to stop. I mean, there's, like I said, there's certain things that certain coverages are designed to help more on, and then there's other coverages that are designed to help otherwise. That's why you have a variety of coverages. You know, I don't think any one coverage is the answer for everything. Are you talking about rolling up on the outside on the receivers?
Well, just extra protection back there so we can't get behind.
Well, if you have three guys deep, you got more protection than you have two guys deep. If you want to roll up on the outside receivers, I mean, that's one way to do it, but he's not always outside. I mean, he may be rolling up on somebody else. So, I mean, I don't think there's one answer to anything. Like, oh, we're just going to do this, and that's going to take care of everything. I mean, I just don't think that's the way you do it. Not in this league, not against a team like Cleveland. It has a lot of different guys that can kill you. I mean, stop one guy, okay, great. I mean, what about the rest of them?
Bill, in last week's game, before James scored the touchdown, Shane caught a pass. Looked like he might have been able to tightrope inside the pylon. I guess in a situation like that, especially if you want to go quick on that next snap, how do you balance the consideration of waiting for the replay to possibly challenge what might have been a touchdown with, of course, catching the defense when maybe they're not lined up on that next snap?
Yeah, I don't think you can. I don't think you can wait to challenge the play. I think as the play caller, you know, if you're the Josh, in this case, calling the plays, I mean, you got to call the play. You can't, you know, wait and, you know, is there going to be a replay? What's going to, you know, you can't operate like that. You got to say, okay, you know, the person up in the press box that relays the information says, okay, you know, the ball's spotted, you know, it's inside the one, or it's on the 1.5, or, you know, wherever the ball is, or it's, you know, first and goal if we've gotten a first down, or it's 3rd and 1 if we haven't gotten a first down, whatever it is. And then you got to make your call. You know, you can't wait. Now, while that's all going on, then, you know, we have somebody else who would be, you know, seeing if there is a replay, and then they would tell me, or I would, you know, say, okay, look, Josh, we're going to challenge the play, or, you know, that type of thing. But it's kind of, we're a little bit independent on that. You know, as a play caller, you can't be, you know, you got to see the situation. You got to see what the down and distance is or what the field position is. Like, is it inside the 20? Is it inside the 10? Is it, you know, because maybe you have a breaking point on your calls there, possibly. And then, you know, you want to know what their personnel is. So if you're changing personnel, you want to know, you know, what's in the game. Is nickel in, or they stayed regular, or they come in with dime or whatever it is. And then as soon as you get that information, then you make your call. And you can't have five people talking at once. So you get the information from the press box as quickly as we can see it. Okay, you know, the ball's on the two. It's second down. Okay, here comes nickel. You know, and then, all right, then you make your call. Or, you know, sometimes they hold their subs till, you know, you make your subs. Or here comes goal line, whatever it is. Then, you know, then as soon as you make your substitute, or you make your call, you say, okay, you know, give me whatever it is. Give me three receivers. Three receivers start on there. And then as the call is being made, then a, you know, person in the press box says, okay, here comes nickel, or here comes dime, or they're staying regular. All right, and then, you know, he'll finish making his call, because that might affect what he's calling. It might not, but, you know, it might. So that's kind of how – meanwhile, the whole replay thing is separate from that.
We'll end the
V-Low
era with a final question for you.
Oh, I don't know. Final question. Devon Best, guy that you've seen quite a bit, he's had some success. I mean, you mentioned, you know, you stopped Josh Gordon, you got a lot of other guys, but are they using him the same way that the Dolphins often do?
Yeah, I would say so. Uh-huh. He's, you know, shows up a lot on possession situations, got to have it type situations. You know, the Browns have gone for it on fourth down more than any team in the league, and that's not all behind. I mean, there's a lot of fourth and ones, fourth and twos in the first quarter that they go for on. He's shown up in a lot of those plays, a lot of third down possession type plays, critical situations. He makes a lot of tough catches. But again, they got a lot of options, as you said. So, and he's definitely one of them. But I think you see the same things from Best that we've always seen. He's smart. He's quick. He's strong, you know, kind of like Troy Brown strong, where he gets hit, but he's keeps his balance and is able to fall forward, or, you know, break a tackle and make extra yardage. You know, I'm not saying he's as good as Troy Brown, but, like, he's that kind of, you know, good, strong player that's tough and physical, has good quickness, very dependable guy. They go to him. And they also, you know, design some plays for him. So there's some plays that he's the guy that's running them, and anytime an offensive coordinator designs plays for a guy, then you know that you know this is something that they get the right matchup, that, you know, this is where they want to go. I mean, if they don't get the matchup, then they're going somewhere else, but you know you can see that they got things, you know, some things set up for him every week, and he does a good job with them. So yeah, he's a tough guy to handle. Okay. All right, thank you. All right, thanks.